Technology Taming Traffic. That's the title of today's show on Inside the Black Box. Coming up next, our guest is Carrie Watkins from the School of Civil and Environmental Engineering. And she's going to talk about something that's actually featured on the homepage of Georgia Tech. This, One Bus Away. I'm excited about One Bus Away. But it sounds like some touchy-feely thing you learned while you were doing your PhD up at University of Washington in Seattle. Is it a touchy-feely thing?
Absolutely not. It's okay. About efficiency and saving time and being a type A personality and wanting to get somewhere when you want to be there.
Good elevator speech, right? I mean, here at Georgia Tech, we tell our students you should have that quickie, 30-second thing of why this is important. I think it is kind of touchy-feely and Seattle coffee culture kind of thing. But it's also good for us type A personalities like me, who's always late and always running late, wants to get there on time, is only going to take buses and public transportation if he can find out the critical information that your application does.
Exactly.
All right. So our show coming up on Inside the Black Box is for everyone, touchy-feely folks and type A personalities. That's Technology Taming Traffic. Next up on Inside the Black Box, science only funnier.
Friend Joe Bizard inviting you to tune into my country music classics here on WREK at 91.1 Friday evenings at 5 o'clock. We come alive at 5 with great old-time music. String bands, bluegrass, old country blues, a little of everything, jug bands, anything that you can imagine, you'll hear on the country music classics. All happy music. A little jug band. Don't forget, this is Friday at 5. We come alive right here with the Country Music Classics on WREK-FM 91.1. Make it a habit. Tune in. Love to have you. That's Fridays at 5 right here on WREK 91.1.
Hello, welcome to 50 Pounds of Rice.
这是最棒的, 排名第一的亚洲音乐节目。
This is Super Best Number One Asian Music Show.
我是你的主持人郭泽华。
I'm your DJ Winter.
And I'm Jay Walk.
中华人民共和国人民以及亚洲各国人民强烈呼吁你在每周一晚间6点到7点收听我们的节目。
For your own prosperity and good health, the People's Republic of China, as well as other countries from the Far East, would like you to tune in to 50 Pounds of Rice every Monday from 6 to 7 p.m.
我们不见不散.
It's been wonderful, and we look forward to your visit.
People see rock and roll as youth culture, and when youth culture becomes monopolized by big business, what are the youth to do? Do you have any idea? I think we should destroy the bogus capitalist process that is destroying youth culture.
For the best in indie rock and hipster pop, tune into Cool Sounds every Tuesday night at 6 p.m. only on WREK Atlanta.
The opinions reflected on Inside the Black Box do not necessarily reflect those of WREK Atlanta or the Georgia Institute of Technology. Welcome to Inside the Black Box, a weekly program on science and technology, or as we like to think of it, science only funnier. And speaking of funnier, obviously we lost the liner that contained the disclaimer as well. I meant to say the opinions expressed on Inside the Black Box. A lot of reflection there in that disclaimer. But nonetheless, ladies and gentlemen, we're glad you're joining us here today. The title of today's program, Technology Taming Traffic. And our guest is Kerry Watkins from the School of Civil and Environmental Engineering faculty here at the Georgia Institute of Technology. Kerry did her undergraduate degree here.
I did.
And then you came back.
I did.
Is that a tough transition?
Somewhat. I think it was a long enough time period before I came back that it wasn't that tough. But I have colleagues in my department who I had as professors as an undergrad.
So. Well, so I work with Cliff Henderson, and he's been on the program before in the School of Chemical and Biomolecular Engineering. And he's in the same boat, and he's got some weird stories. We're not going to ask you to share those weird stories. But the weirdest story along those lines was my colleague here at Georgia Tech, Mary Rizak, who eventually left, went back to Kansas State University, where she became department head. Mm-hmm. And she became department head where she had a gentleman on the faculty who was emeritus at the time, who she had for the introductory mass and energy balance class. And I'm familiar with the way this guy teaches that. Not, he was not a nice guy in that class. And I'm wondering, and so Mary being the, you know, reasonable person that she is, in no way decided, well, who's going to get an office where based on that. I'm not sure I would have been so altruistic. So that's a story for another time, probably involving the consumption of beer and or wine in copious quantities. But so you left here, Georgia Tech, and then went out to touchy-feely, earthy, crunchy land, Seattle, University of Washington?
Not quite. I left here and I moved to Connecticut for about 10 years.
Oh, where you actually worked for a living.
I worked for a living for an entire decade, which is a little unusual for a professor. Uh-huh. Got a professional engineer's license and had a couple of kids with my husband, who's also a tech grad.
So had kids, worked for Wilbur Smith Associates in New Haven, Connecticut.
I did,
Then decided to go back. And actually, my friend Mary Rizak did something very similar. She wasn't working for that long, but she did, in fact, work for a while before she went back to get her graduate degree. Me, I got my graduate degree and then worked for a while in industry before coming back here.
Okay.
I think that's a good thing, is it not?
Working in industry?
Yeah.
Absolutely. There are things that I learned working in industry that I don't think I ever could have gotten on the job in academia. And I teach a lot of classes that are very practical. So I teach our senior design class, things like that. And I mean, without that industry experience, there's no way I could do that.
Right, right. No, I do the same thing. And I do think that having worked in industry, I worked for sort of a service industry. We did consulting in my field, and working with lots of customers, that was a very useful thing. So, and what we're going to talk about in a moment is, I guess we'll start with this One Bus Away program. And this is something you started, actually, when you were doing your graduate work?
It was, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you were able to bring it successfully to Georgia?
So I worked with some folks in computer science at the University of Washington. It's a funny story. Do we have time for a story right now?
Yeah, hit it.
Okay. It's actually a funny story. I had started this program called One Bus Away that was really about what can you get to with just one bus ride. So if you're used to a Google Trip Planner, that type of thing, there's a transit version of that's really affected our industry a bunch. So if you know where you're going, the address of where you're going, that works great. But if you sort of have a category of something, you know, you're trying to go out for drinks and you want to be able to take transit to get there, it's really a hard search to do. And so I had actually created a program that was very crude because I do not code that well. And I had put this sort of out there, and someone loved the name One Bus Away, and he stole my URL. I went to go and get a website for this program, and One Bus Away was gone. And there was this goofy real-time thing that I thought, what is all this about? And I looked at the program and I thought, actually, this is pretty cool. This is much better format than what we had at the time. Mm-hmm. And I said, I got to meet this guy and find out why he stole my URL. And I went in there, you know, boxing gloves on. I was ready to tell this guy where to go. And we totally hit it off. We became research partners and worked together throughout both of our PhDs. And his name is Brian Ferris. He now works for Google Transit in Zurich. It's his dream job. I did my PhD based on what we created together and got my dream job here at Georgia Tech as a professor.
Well, so let me quote Monty Burns from The Simpsons on this one. Excellent. Wow, that was really cool. So let's get back to that. And what I'd really like to know is how you took this idea, which I think is really neat, using public transportation to find the nearest thing that you want. Mm-hmm. And it looks as though one of the things you've done is you've outlined the single biggest barrier to public transportation, and that is the dreaded transfer. If you can get to someplace with one subway ride or, you know, one bus ride, it's good. It's the transferring. It's the waiting. It's you get the slip of paper. Do I need the slip of paper? I didn't used to, but now when I go to the Braves games, I do, and it's all complicated, and I really don't like it. So that's actually something that yours deals with, in a sense, because it's one bus away.
Yeah, part of it, even the phrasing transfer, I like to call them connections instead, right?
Yes,
pulling
I agree.
From the airline
industry.
It's
all in the marketing.
It is. But transfers in the U.S. are really horrible, and so you're trying to minimize them. If you travel to other places, you'll see that connecting from one mode to another or, you know, from one vehicle to another within the transit system is really not that difficult. Mm-hmm. If you make it a much simpler process, it's really not to be avoided quite as bad. Mm-hmm. But here in the U.S., when we're talking about vehicles that come every 20 minutes, 30 minutes, 40 minutes, no, you definitely don't want to have to transfer. And even if it's a time transfer, if something goes wrong, then that's not going to happen. And so that's sort of where we started. But a lot of it, sort of the transfer is the big evil, but the wait is the other big evil. And that's really what we focused on through the rest of the One Bus Away program while we were in grad school.
All right. So taming that transit wait. Before we get to that, let's begin the program as we often do with...
Science in the News.
And today's Science in the News actually comes from Science magazine, Martin Esserink. In an article entitled Research on Cellular Traffic Bags Nobel Awards. And I got to admit, when I first saw that, I thought, wow, is the Nobel Prize really getting updated? Cellular traffic. No, we're talking about the Nobel Prize in medicine and physiology. And by cellular traffic, I mean transport of molecules in and out of cells. And I want to refer back to our September 18th episode with Ryan Lively talking about separations, the forgotten science. And separations really is a lot about transport, right? So molecular transport, mass transport, things like that. It's very often forgotten when we think about things. So we often think about, you know, sexy areas of medicine like DNA and RNA, okay, messing with the genetic code. That seems really cool. And then also this lock and key thing about if we have a particular agonist or antagonist and it can bind to a receptor, then suddenly, okay, that changes the way the cell behaves, and that's all really cool. But one of the more difficult things to understand is how molecules get transported to and from. It's a very complicated process. Often involves a molecule adhering to the outside of a cell, it sort of subsuming it inside an endosome and moving it in and doing the same thing in reverse to go outside. And it's extremely important, and that is why three researchers who studied how cells shuttle around essential molecules in tiny intracellular sacs, that's what I mean by these endosomes, have won this year's Nobel Prize in Physiology and Medicine. James Rothman of Yale University, Randy Scheckman of the University of California, Berkeley, and Thomas Sudhoff of Stanford University earned the award for the discoveries of the machinery regulating vesicle traffic, right? Vesicle, another name for one of these sort of surrounded, encapsulated set of molecules. Vesicle traffic, a major transport system in our cells, according to the announcement from the Nobel Assembly at the Karolinska Institute in Stockholm. And although mistakes in cellular transport systems can cause a variety of diseases, very common ones like diabetes and other neurological and immunological disorders, their work has not yet led to any new drugs or therapies. But the work that they're citing here has actually helped people develop diagnostic tests. It may take longer for people to figure this sort of thing out because it's much more complicated than just a protein binding to a receptor or changing the RNA or DNA sequence. But I'm relatively confident that it will. And it's something that a lot of people don't think about. It's extremely important in medicine and physiology. And finally, today, it was recognized by the Nobel Committee. So now let's get back to technology taming traffic. So I had no idea this started with you and, you know, wanting to throw down against this guy. It's kind of an interesting thing. You point out the multidisciplinary nature of your research.
Definitely.
So you are a civil and environmental engineer, and that means traffic. Traffic is a part of civil engineering, right? Mm-hmm. People at Georgia Tech study
transportation.
Traffic. Right. So But it forced you to go off into maybe the computer science area because this is an amp.
It is. Right. It is. And I some of my other work also involves apps. Right. And the coding part of this, I've always relied on amazing partners to be doing. So I've worked quite a bit with folks in computer science, specifically in the field of human-computer interaction. And they're usually interested in, you know, not only what is the technology and actually creating the apps and whatnot, but thinking through the process of how do we do that so that we're creating things that people really need and that they're not having adverse impacts and things like that.
Mm-hmm. So I guess one of the interesting thing is when you make an application like this, right, and we can talk a little bit later about how you make the interface better. Mm-hmm. That's important to all of us, right? Because who doesn't get an app and say, well, that's a really good one, and then curse the other app they bought because it doesn't quite interact. I'm a big fan of the Delta app that now lets me figure out where my bags are. Mm. And if you check a bag like I do, you know, you go in and 5 minutes after you checked it, it will actually give you an update saying, you know, checked. And then when you're on the plane and you can watch the real-time scanned at plane side, oh, that means your bag got on the plane and you feel real good. Normally, if you don't see the scan at plane side, it's too late for you to do anything about it. But at least you know ahead of time that your bag is not going to arrive and you can make the appropriate changes. Mm-hmm. But you're doing something a little more difficult, right? The Delta app, and there are aspects of the Delta app I would like to change. Mm-hmm. And I actually got paid. I was on the committee that, you know, sort of sampled this thing. I did some of the testing of it, so I have only myself to blame. Mm-hmm. But Delta has their data, and Delta can take their data, manipulate their data any way you want. You don't have this data.
No.
Where does this data come from, and how do you get access to it?
That's a great question. So it comes from the transit agencies themselves in the case of One Bus Away. So we rely on transit agencies being willing to share their data with us or to open it up so that any developer would be able to make use of the data. So in the case of One Bus Away bringing it to Atlanta, it worked really well in Seattle. We had 100,000 unique weekly users out there, hugely successful. I needed a research platform here in Atlanta, and so we wanted to bring it here. So I immediately, from the moment I got to tech, started working with MARTA to try to get them to at least share their data with us, if not open it up. Mm-hmm. And through some of my efforts and some other folks' efforts, we finally got them to do so. About a year ago, they opened up their bus data. So we were able to bring that in and to start working with that so that we could show it through One Bus Away.
So what's the nature of this data? Is this data really just scheduling data, or is it actual real-time data?
Well, so we need both. We need a schedule, and then we need real-time to know where the bus actually is at that moment. So, and we can get that in a lot of different ways, but now most agencies have GPS-equipped buses. And so it's basically just that location data. And it, really what we're doing is comparing the two. We're telling you how many minutes until that bus or train, hopefully very soon, is coming, as well as how does that compare to the schedule that you're used to. Is it 2 minutes late, 1 minute early, that type of thing.
Okay. Well, let's talk about the details about how you use that data to help me figure out what is One Bus Away in just a moment. But right now we'll take a quick break. And when we come back, if you've got questions or comments about this, and surely the folks that live in the Atlanta area too, because this is both frustrating and the prospect of having this data sounds really interesting to help you get around. But if you are listening to us live Wednesdays noon to one and have a question or comment for Carrie, by all means, give us a call here at the studio at 404-894-2468. Once again, that number, 404-894-2468. We'll be right back with Inside the Black Box, Science Only Funnier.
Hi, this is your radio friend, Joe Bizard, inviting you to tune into my country music classics here on WREK at 91.1. Friday evenings at 5 o'clock. We come alive at 5 with great old-time music. String bands, bluegrass, old country blues, a little of everything, jug bands, anything that you can imagine, you'll hear on the country music classics. All happy music. A little jug band. Don't forget, this is Friday at 5. We come alive right here with the Country Music Classics on WREK-FM 91.1. Make it a habit. Tune in. Love to have you. That's Fridays at 5 right here on WREK 91.1.
This is the official 30-second promo for Stonehenge, so please enjoy it. If this is not good enough, tune in every Friday from 8 to midnight for the best underground classic rock in the universe on WREK 91.1 FM, Atlanta. October 13th at 7 p.m. for an exploration into deep and intricate dance music as we present 2-hour-long mixes of tech house and tech step drum and bass by WREK's own DJs. The Tech Dance Special, Sunday, October 13th at 7 p.m. only on WREK Atlanta.
Welcome back to Inside the Black Box, where the title of today's program is Technology Taming Traffic. And Kerry Watkins is talking to us about this fabulous application that she migrated from the liberal, crunchy area of Seattle down here to Atlanta, Georgia, called One Bus Away. So during the break, we were talking about the fact that the real-time data actually is now crunched by MARTA, and they give it to you, you know, minus any formatting issues, right? And whenever we say formatting issues on the radio, that could be months and years of people worrying about the way the records are and this and, you know, the format and is it 64-bit data or whatever. Mm-hmm. But that's, in principle, something that can usually be solved and obviously mm-hmm. something that you've dealt with. So you can find out how many more minutes till the next bus is mm-hmm. coming. Mm-hmm. Have there been any psychology studies on how comforting that is?
Yeah, I don't know that I would call them psychology studies.
I'll take anecdotal stuff at this point. Because anecdotally, that's the single most important information in my life.
Yeah. Well, so my own research is mm-hmm. predominantly about what the impacts of this are. So mm-hmm. Right now here at Georgia Tech, I have a PhD student who's working with me to look at, does it change ridership? Do we actually get more people to use the bus and the train if we give them this kind of information? Prior to that, we were really concerned with wait time. Because it turns out that when you're waiting for something, whether it's the doctor's office or, right. or something else like that, you usually feel like you're waiting about twice as long as the time that's passing.
Right, right.
And we do all kinds of crazy things like put up mirrors or fish tanks or things like that. Mirrors because we, of course, love to look at ourselves, right? And so time passes slower.
Yeah, I try to avoid that, actually. I'd rather have the fish tank, even with ugly fish in it.
So what we were trying to do with One Bus Away is if you give people information about how long that wait is, then they perceive that they're waiting about the amount of time that they actually are. You don't have this sort of doubling of that wait time as you're perceiving it. And so we had seen studies where if there were signs in stations that this was true, that you were mm-hmm. actually knew how long you had been waiting. But we wondered if you do it on a mobile device, is it going to have the same impact? And sure enough, not only did it have the same impact, but people didn't even go to the station until the vehicle was arriving. So it's not just changing that perception of wait time, but it's changing how long they're actually waiting for the bus or the train.
Right. So on the mobile device, it's even better because you don't have to go wait there.
Exactly.
And you're right. If I know I've got to wait 15 minutes, I will pull something out of my briefcase, or I'll pull out my laptop or my mobile device and do some stuff. Mm-hmm. But if I know it's coming in a minute, I'm like, okay, I'm ready to go.
And, exactly.
You know, you don't have to get your stuff out.
The power of information. Yeah.
I was in the doctor's office yesterday morning for like a 7 o'clock procedure. And what did they have on? They had on CNN, I think. Mm-hmm. Which I can live with CNN. There are a lot of other stations they choose that I'm not a big fan of. But you're absolutely right. I don't need any study to tell me that when I'm waiting, it feels like agony. Yeah. And how long did you wait? 20 minutes? Yeah, I know it wasn't 20 minutes. It just feels like I give them the answer that what it feels like, and I know it's not that. Mm-hmm. But I'm just so frustrated when you do that sort of thing. Okay, so that's the advantage. So I think you were saying to me before we even went on the air that, you know, if you're in Seattle, you're going to stay at Pete's Coffee or whatever it is that exactly. you're staying.
Oh, you know Pete's?
Yes, I've been to Seattle. And I'm not even a coffee drinker. I'm a tea guy, but everyone tells me about Pete's out in Seattle. And then you'll be like, okay, I got a couple minutes. It takes me a minute to walk. I'm going to leave when I got 3 minutes to go. Or if you're like me, you cut it right to the razor's edge.
Yeah, folks like you. So the data is not always 100% accurate, right?
Okay.
There's some play in there. A driver could sort of catch up a little bit on his route
okay.
and whatnot.
Okay.
So the way that we actually get around those folks who cut it exactly to the second is that when your bus is 2 minutes away, we say it's coming now. So it counts down, it hits
Good
two,
move.
Then it goes to now. So we never want you to be timing it so that when it's 1 minute away, because inevitably you're going to get mad at us when you then miss it because this driver is sort of caught back up to the schedule when he was behind, that type of thing.
Ah, okay. So this is actually a really good illustration of, I first saw you talk about this in a symposium leading up to the visit of Don Norman, mm-hmm. Don Norman, who wrote Living with Complexity. This is our first year reading book here at Georgia Tech. And you and the guy who works on the, what do we call it? The what's the big circle?
The Beltline.
Came and talked about this and how design is an important element to these things. You have to think about how you design the interface for the person and things like that. And that's exactly what Don Norman talked about in his talk. He said that if you, and he talked about the Apple Newton. Do you remember the Apple Newton? Good. That means you're nice and young. That's good. I was actually here, you know, 20 years ago when people said, this is the way we'll do learning from now on. And the Apple Newton was just a really ancient version of the iPad today.
Okay.
And it did handwriting recognition, and it had a very sophisticated algorithm that never worked. Mm. So it got scrapped. And it was a beautiful device, and it did other things very, very well. It was basically the iPad before you could make it thin.
Right.
It was thick. It was heavy. It took 4 AA batteries or something like that. And then he pointed out that the guys from Palm Pilot did uh-huh. something really good. They said, look, the computer's not smart enough to read your handwriting. Let me teach you how to write for the computer.
Right.
And if you ever had a Palm device, you realize there was a shorthand that you took.
Mm-hmm.
Very easy to learn. I mm-hmm. used it all the time. I loved it. I thought it was great. And then he said, So if you messed up on the Palm Pilot, you blamed yourself because mm-hmm. you didn't know the shorthand well enough. If you messed up on the Newton, you blame the computer.
Mm-hmm.
And in a sense, what you're saying is you're taking something very important to science research, which is the precision of the data.
Mm-hmm.
And you're building that in to say, look, I'm going to build that cushion in from when I finally tell you you're going to be there. Because if I cut it right to the edge, the computer's not perfect. The data's not perfect. You'll blame the system and they'll curse Kerry Watkins' name.
Exactly.
And the people. Whereas if you build that in, you know, who cares if you're 30 seconds or a minute early,
right.
then you feel better about it.
Exactly.
So there it is, an important design principle that I'll actually be talking to my GT1000 class about in just a little bit. Okay, so were there any other obstacles that you encountered in trying to get this to work for real humans? Because you mentioned the human-machine interface is really tough. Were there things that you tried at first that didn't necessarily work all that well, or things that evolved?
You know, I think the hardest part, both in Seattle and here in Atlanta, was really something we've talked about already, which was trying to get the data. So that, you know, doesn't really have to do with the human interaction of it. One of the things, I guess, that's difficult is I still think within One Bus Away on the app itself that when we have scheduled data only, when something's going wrong and we're not picking up that signal from the bus or the rail vehicle, mm-hmm. and we have to go to schedule only, there's a note that's in there. And I think that people still don't understand that, you know, this is the best prediction that we can make of when this bus is going to get there, as predicted 3 months ago when a scheduler was creating schedule, right? Okay. We don't have good information about where the bus is actually at. So we can't give you this real-time better prediction right now. Right. And I think people sort of expect that from the app, and they don't notice that whole this is scheduled data piece. So you have to take this with a grain of salt. Okay. This is the same as looking at your paper schedule or, you know, whatever you're used to getting scheduled data for that vehicle for.
Right. So the interface issue, I think, is then that that needs to be big, bold, and in red to say, look, for some reason we're not getting the GPS data.
Yeah.
That means we're going to default to the general schedule.
Right.
And this is America. You know how bad the general schedule is. You're lucky if it's within 20 minutes. You know, maybe you should have gotten a cup of Pete's Coffee to go or something like that, because God only knows how long you're going to be waiting. And now you've pointed something out to me really interesting. You know, you talked about how things in the United States are very frustrating in this regard. Were you implying before that maybe in Europe or other places it's not so frustrating?
Yeah. So this very same research partner who I worked with in Seattle started at Google Transit, and I had startup funds to use. And so we managed to get a talk scheduled for me to speak at a university there in Zurich. And I got to visit Google's
offices. In
Zurich, Switzerland.
Whoa. Let me stop you right there. So Switzerland was... The uptight, anal retentive Swiss were exactly what I was thinking about. I spent a year and a half in Switzerland and doing some postgraduate work. And the Swiss, the Zurichlinie, the tram car line in Zurich, takes it calibrates its clock on the atomic clock every so often. It announces the time. I used to check my watch against it.
Of course.
And the drivers simply see it as a matter of pride that at 11:37, not 11:35, not 11:40, 11:37, it arrived. And 11:36, it was rounding the corner coming up to the ETH where I was studying. And it was plus or minus seconds.
Okay. Yeah.
So
ETH is where I did my talk, actually. Okay. And while I was there, I got to ride the tram system extensively because it's me. And every place I go, I basically go so that I can ride public transportation and rent bikes and ride bikes around. But so the tram system there, they have a lot of, as we call them, transfers, or as I prefer, connections within that system in order for it to function well. But they are timed to the second.
So
your tram pulls up. You walk across one platform. On the opposite side of the platform is that tram you're transferring to. There's a whole crowd of folks doing the same thing. You barely feel like it's happening.
And
it's so seamless, so easy to do.
And if it says you have 2 minutes in between, you have 2 minutes
exactly
in between. And that's
minutes.
Just enough for you to, you know, go there and get your bag ready and things like that. Mm. Wow. So basically what we're saying is getting the GPS data is just redundant, right? The GPS data is just a check on the schedule, and the schedule is followed to the second. And that's just the way the Swiss are. Why can't the Americans be
that
way?
Well, so in Zurich, they also have real-time information. They'll have signs up in the stations and whatnot. Right. So you can also get that there. There are times that they're behind schedule.
Right, but it's got to be rare.
So part of it is that they've got exclusive right-of-way running in most of the systems over there, right? So when we're comparing a Swiss tram to an Atlanta bus, it's a world of difference because that Atlanta bus is getting stuck behind all those drivers in their single occupant vehicles, and there's no priority there whatsoever. So if congestion is bad, if there's an accident, if there's something going on, the bus is going to get stuck, right? And they really don't have a lot of power over meeting that.
And they build some of that into the schedule. So I'm sure things are slower at rush hour, but say Sunday Dragon Con, the parade, that's not something
there's really no way to predict that. And so it's not in the schedule. And so then that's when you need that real-time information.
Okay. So one drawback, too, is because the S-Bahn in big cities like Zurich and Germany and things like that have the right of way, you sometimes get a big delay, and the big delay is, and I used to see it going on my way to work every day, is when a car gets hammered by one of these, you know, 30-ton things that go through the city, and they just get knocked out of the way. So those were most of the accidents that ever happened in Zurich were when a tram car hit these sort of thing. Wow, so I never thought about it that way. That's actually really interesting. And then I'm sure, you know, here when it doesn't match the schedule, first of all, nobody pays attention to the schedule. I know I don't when I take, and I take public transportation in cities in Europe and the United States all over the place. I just try to get the thing and say, okay, they're coming every 5 minutes here, so I'll hope for the best. But it's, yeah, I'm sure when it does come late, the conversation is interesting. You know, people are like, my gosh, it's 3 minutes late. What is this, Italy? That's what they used to say in Zurich. Anytime you did anything out of line, like put the brown glass in the green glass recycling, some little old Swiss lady was like, I've actually heard this. What do you think this is, Italy? Now, have you rode public transportation in Italy?
I have to a certain extent. Yeah. Not as extensive as
but
in
Italy Zurich, but could benefit from. Italy's like us. Italy's like, hey, whatever, you know.
Yeah, I think the Italians are also a little more laid back about when it gets there,
too. You wouldn't get nearly as many complaints. I like that. I could live, you know, I lived in Switzerland for a year and a half, and I loved it. It's a wonderful city if you ever make it to Zurich or any city in Switzerland. But if you're more the, I guess maybe I am more the laid back type person. I was describing myself. I'm type A, but also laid back. Italy's more for you. So we concentrate on wait times, but originally you said this was called One Bus Away. Does it do anything to help let you know what is One Bus Away?
Actually, that part of it we stopped doing.
Okay, that was the original
thought. We had actually created this tool called the Explorer tool, and it worked pretty well for a while, but there are other applications now that are getting to the point where that can be combined with those. There's actually trip planners out there, such as the Open Trip Planner that competes with Google's Trip Planner, that they're looking at combining that into some of those. Okay. So we've sort of dropped that tool for the time being. Okay. Although a bigger part of the research program is to figure out what the barriers to transit use are. What are, you know, wait time is one of those, right? And worrying about telling you when the next bus is coming. But there are a lot of other things that you could envision that it would help to know. In Seattle in particular, they had very full buses. And often there would be one, you know, 2 minutes behind. When a bus starts to get behind schedule, what happens is what's called bus bunching. So so two buses, the one that's getting behind will start picking up more and more and more passengers, and he gets more and more behind, right? And the one that was behind him is getting closer and closer to the point where eventually they're one right after the other. Sometimes that's starting to happen, but they're still maybe a minute apart. And if we can give people information about, okay, this first bus is very crowded, don't worry about that one. Take this next one. You're going to have a seat. It's going to be a much better experience. It can make the system work better, and it can make the rider happier if they wait on that second bus. So that could be another piece of data that we could push out via something like One Bus Away, is sort of this fullness of the vehicle so that people can start to make choices about it based on that. Or if you're a wheelchair user or a cyclist, to have sensors and such so that we know when the wheelchair bays are used, or if there's, you know, two
bike racks on the front of the bus.
If both of them are taken and you're looking to bring your bike, it'd be great to have that kind of information via an app so that you don't have to wait on that one and see that you're not going to be able to bring your bike on board with you. So, you know, all of these little pieces of information, we've actually tried to work at having conversations with people about what are your barriers to using transit, whether you're not using it and we're trying to convince you to, or whether you're already using it, but these are the things that go wrong on a day-to-day basis that you're frustrated about. And are there things that we can do with technology and information to make that situation better?
Okay. And then again, you're pointing out how sort of location and culturally dependent this is, right? So if it was a crowded bus or a crowded train, Tokyo subway, nobody cares. There's these guys jamming you in there. If you were in New Delhi, right? If you were in Mumbai, there are nine people hanging out the doors, right? I believe this is against most of the traffic laws of the United States. You can't, I mean, have people hanging out the door. So you're like, You're right. You'd rather wait for another. And people will make that decision, right? They'll actually wait.
Oh, absolutely.
Wow. So this is the kind of information you're working on now mm-hmm. to maybe add down the road.
Exactly.
So this makes perfect sense. It's totally logical. What's way out there? Is there anything? Is there like the holy grail of information? Like for me, it would be on a scale of 1 to 10. How much of that pesky urine smell is in this particular bus? Not to say that happens in Atlanta, but there are metropolitan areas that I've been in that maybe don't have the nicest of buses. is there anything that's way out there? Like, well, how annoying are the passengers?
We try to think through what the negative repercussions of these things might be. You know, how annoying are the passengers, or do you have a mean bus driver, that type of thing. There might be some negative repercussions to that we might not want to create an app around some of these pieces data, right?
Okay.
But when I envision sort of this perfect app, what it would be like, it would be the type of thing where I wake up in the morning and I am, you know, getting ready, and it sends me an alert that says, Carrie, your usual bus today is actually running a little bit behind. There's some unusual congestion over at Emory. There was some festival, something going on. And it's going to be a little bit late. So you have a few extra minutes to get ready. And so I take that extra time. Or maybe it says, your bus actually broke down. You better grab your gear, even though it's a rainy day, grab your bike gear and get on your bike, because you're not going to want to wait for transit, because you're going to miss that 9 o'clock meeting that you have scheduled. So it's pulling my own data from my planner and things like that. So it's saying, you know, take this alternative instead, because mm-hmm. I know that you need to be at Georgia Tech by 9 o'clock, right? Machine learning is going into this, incorporating all of these different data sources.
So it's incorporated with your schedule and things. And it learns that you get much more angry if you're late to the morning meeting rather than the afternoon meeting, things like that. So what you're saying is the perfect version of this app would be like that orange juice commercial. You know, where you have all those people gathered around. Have you seen this thing where they're your car's going to break down on the 105, and this is going to, this is going to happen. And you get all this bad news, and he goes, good thing I got my orange juice.
So, there you go.
So it's like your orange juice of transportation.
Well, and also sort of having functionality into it that I get to Georgia Tech. Mm-hmm. I'm here. I decide that I'm going to go out to lunch. You and I are going to go out to lunch.
Okay.
And we decide that we want to grab Thai food today. And there's no good Thai restaurant really close to Tech. So we're going to take public transportation in order to get there. And we want to know. So we type into our app, give us Thai. And it tells us, okay, this is a restaurant that you might want to try. This is the route that you should take there to get there easily mm-hmm. on transit. It's leaving at this particular time. And we go and we do that, and we come back and we go on with our day, that type of thing, right?
So in a sense, it's the great equalizer, right? In that now I already have that on my phone. My phone, I can say, find me the nearest Thai restaurant. It will give me a route via my car.
Exactly.
And for a small extra fee, I can add that in and have it give me real-time traffic information as well.
Exactly.
Right? I do the average traffic information, which is free, and it'll tell, your hose is going to take you twice as long. But the real-time stuff is there, and it will change your route based on that.
Yep.
Now it's doing the same thing for public transit.
Exactly. And what I experienced living in a place, a wonderful place, granola-y place like Seattle, uh-huh. was that I actually had more freedom with One Bus Away as it existed at the time, mm-hmm. not even talking about this sort of futuristic, you know, combining all this information but as it existed at the time, just telling me when the next bus was coming, they had a good enough transit system in place that I felt freer using transit than I did with an automobile.
Right.
Because what would happen to me is I would go downtown, and if I chose to drive, I would park my car and I would be somewhere, but I would want to go somewhere else that was, you know, maybe a half mile away, pretty quick walk away.
Right.
And so I would do that walk, and I'm now a little bit further than my vehicle. My other alternative is to get back in that vehicle and try to find a new place to park. Well, parking was expensive and not as prevalent in Seattle, right? So Atlanta's a little bit different of a situation, mm-hmm. although we're getting to the point space-wise where Atlanta is headed in that direction.
Pleasant, no.
Yeah. But in Seattle, so what I would find is I would park that vehicle, I'd go half mile, I'd do something. I'd say, oh, yeah, I want to try that one place for lunch. It's another half mile away. I'd jump on the monorail out there and take it to right. this next location. Before I knew it, I had spent the day usually with my kids in tow, seeing all these things in Seattle, enjoying my Saturday. And mm-hmm. we're 2 miles away from our car, and we have to try to figure out how to get back right. to our car. Right. When there was a bus around the corner that would have gotten me home mm-hmm. much quicker than it would be to try to get back to my right. car, get in my car and go back. Right. And I had spent, you know, $20 to park it for the day. So right. when I was taking transit, because I had great information in the palm of my hand, I had a lot more freedom. I didn't have this huge object that I was dragging along with me. Right. And so it was much easier. I would get downtown, I'd connect to the next thing, walk to the next thing, do right. my thing, ready to go. We'd jump on, you know, look at where the route was closest to where we were, mm-hmm. jump on and head home.
Okay. And by huge object, you mean your car, not your kids.
Exactly. Okay, no, I'm
metaphorically speaking, sometimes the kids girls. Can... Okay. Okay. All right. I'll leave that one alone. All right. Let's take a quick break. And when we come back, let's segue to one of the other modes you mentioned, which is bicycles. Uh-huh. And we'll talk about what you're doing with bicycles here in Atlanta. So we'll be right back with Kerry Watkins talking about technology taming traffic here on Inside the Black Box. Science, only funnier.
Ever wanted rock music without lyrics? We've got just what you're looking for. Transcend the vocals and check out The Longboard Show every Tuesday night from 9 to 10 p.m. You'll get the rock without the squawk, the beat without the babble, the sound without the frown. That's all on The Longboard Show, Tuesday nights from 9 to 10 p.m. here on WREK Atlanta.
Do you love hip-hop but hate what you hear on the radio? Then you might want to tune in to the Rec Room Renaissance, Atlanta's hottest hip-hop show, every Thursday night from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. to hear the best in new music from established local and international artists. That's the Rec Room Renaissance, every Thursday from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. here on 91.1 FM, WREK Atlanta.
Welcome back to Inside the Black Box, where we're talking with Kerry Watkins from the School of Civil and Environmental Engineering here at Georgia Tech about technology taming traffic. So after the break, we promised we'd talk about bikes. So mm-hmm. tell us a little bit about it. It's called Cycle Atlanta.
Yeah. So what we're trying to do with Cycle Atlanta, we talked earlier about, you know, the transit agencies are sharing this data with us so that we can do something like One Bus Away. Well, the city of Atlanta approached me and said that they really wanted to have a better idea of where people were cycling within mm-hmm. the city, but there really was no data available to be able to do that. Okay. And so I partnered with Chris Ledontek in the digital media department here at Tech. And the two of us had actually known about this app called Cycle Tracks out of San Francisco, where they were using the GPS functionality in the smartphones to track where it was. And people would hit a button and say, you know, actually map where I'm traveling. And we then upload that data to our servers at Georgia Tech, and we can bring it all together and compile it and create maps that show the routes that people are actually taking between various places.
So they're actually, so people are volunteering the information because they want to yeah. see this database built. So
absolutely.
That in that sense, it really is crowdsourcing.
It is.
Because the crowd's doing it. And they get on their bike and they hit their button, and the data gets collected mm-hmm. for all these different routes. And mm-hmm. then suddenly they might find this secret shortcut through a neighborhood that you couldn't take a car through
right.
because, say, there's speed bumps, or sometimes they actually put up these barriers like they do around developments here in Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
But bicycles could easily go there and, like, this is the best kept secret in Atlanta
right.
that you can cycle here and not be on a 4-lane, you know, highway. And wow, so you've opened my eyes here. I realized that a lot of my colleagues and I in chemical engineering, we just ran a big 200-mile relay race from Atlanta to Alabama. And a lot of us use this track your running pace thing. Uh-huh. And I realize that's probably collecting, you know, because none of us read the disclaimer, do we?
Right.
We just
exactly.
go right through that. And the point is, I don't care if they're collecting my data. If I have a good route, you know, they'll probably go, who's this slow guy that lives out in Marietta? But wow, so that's really interesting. So you started with that thing and tried to apply it to figure out where people are going in Atlanta?
So we, you know, made a few tweaks because it had been a few years since they had used it out there. And then in addition to using the GPS functionality, that's one piece of it, right? And it, we can provide that data back to cyclists, but the city was also interested in seeing what are the roads that people are not willing to cycle on so that they can make decisions about putting in new infrastructure. Mm-hmm. So, you know, should we actually be putting bike lanes on Ponce because that's a great route, but nobody's going down it because they're all afraid to intermix with the traffic that's on that road.
There's barely room for the cars on part of Ponce. Yeah. In fact, I'm afraid to drive on Ponce. I think the lanes already are too thin. And then maybe they should get rid of one lane of traffic and just make it bicycles.
So have you been down Ponce lately?
No. Why?
There's a portion of it where what they've done is it was three lanes in each direction. Uh-huh. They've taken those middle lanes that nobody ever used because it was mostly left turners.
Right, right.
And you'd get stuck behind this left turner.
Right.
They've combined those into one. So you've got a center left turn lane, two through lanes, and there's some extra space on the side. And what's coming is actually buffered bike lanes on the side of it.
Excellent. Yeah. So, again, we go back to culture. When I lived in California and I worked for IBM, I used to ride my bike to work on a pretty regular basis. And it, partly it was Northern California. The weather was really nice. But the weather in Atlanta is nice most of the year.
It is. It's a beautiful place to cycle.
But in California, you had your marked bike lane. People actually respected the bike lane because they were in California. That was part of their life, right? That was in their psyche. Here, not so much. I mean, how can we fix that? Is there any way to fix the fact that people enjoy running over bicyclists? That's really the only way I can put
it. Well, let's hope they don't enjoy it.
Okay, maybe they don't. That's too strong of a claim.
But I think that as, and actually research shows that as more cyclists are present, the drivers get used to that and, and they do start to slow down and it becomes a part of the culture.
Right.
So the best way to create that culture of having cyclists intermixing because they feel safer is to have cyclists intermixing. So it's sort of the chicken and the egg problem, right? Nobody wants to cycle because they're afraid of these aggressive drivers. But the drivers are always going to be aggressive until there are things that they have to start slowing down and paying attention to. So, you know, putting some infrastructure in so that they're getting used to seeing the cyclists and the cyclists feel safe is a great way to start. And then you sort of create this culture of having the bikes being there on all kinds of roads.
Right. So then things become like the University of Wisconsin and University of California Davis environments where there's so many bikes around. You're used to that bike lane on your right. So when you make a right turn, you look in your mirror.
Exactly.
Otherwise, so then rental cars should have a big red stripe across them because these are visitors who don't understand. They have to look in their rearview mirror. So where does the program stand now? How much progress have you made? Where are you going?
We've collected quite a bit of data. And if you go to cycleatlanta.org, there's actually a map that you can check out from what we've done so far. And we're still continuing to work with the city of Atlanta. We've actually included new components where you can actually mark issues and assets that you find. So if there's a pothole in a bike lane or if there's a bike rack that's sort of around the corner hidden, you can help us map out those locations. And the issues we can send to the city so that it gets added into their 311 pipeline so that they're actually addressing these things. And the assets we can start to map and create better and better maps of what the cycling environment is so that people know better ways to get around. And actually, we've got some students that did a project working with Chris in the spring where they were using the magnetometer in the phone so that you didn't even have to stop and hit a button on your phone to tell us about an issue or an asset. You just run this magnetic bracelet over your phone, and it picks up a data point. And when you finally get to where you're going, you say, this is what I was trying to note at that particular data point.
Okay, so it's even making it so you don't have to stop and then text in this, this is a pothole at the corner of whatever it is.
Well, yeah, and we've got, a scrolling menu that helps you sort of narrow down what it is.
So both the bus thing and the bicycle thing, These sound like great ideas. Who would not be a fan of this? Is there any group pushing back on any of these things? Or has this been universally embraced by all members of society?
Definitely not universally embraced. Okay. I think there's a fair amount of pushback from everywhere, right? That there are people who love their cars, mm-hmm. and they want to drive everywhere. And mm-hmm. that's okay if they want to be stuck in traffic and in their enclosed little
right.
box.
And pay $25 for parking.
And pay all this yeah. money for parking. Yeah. Then that's fine. But some of those people have sort of pushed back to a certain extent because they feel like maybe cyclists are in their way and so they don't want them there. Or I'm so on the other side that I don't even know why they would push back against the buses. Maybe yeah. because there's subsidies that go to the transit system mm-hmm. That usually your fare doesn't pay the entire amount.
Right.
But I think for the most part, even folks who aren't going to use transit or cycle, they recognize that having other people have these modes available mm-hmm. is a good thing for the system as a whole. That if we put a lot of people on buses, that's less people in cars, and it's a lot right. more efficient to have them grouped together in a vehicle right. than it would be to have them in all these individual vehicles. And that a bus takes up a lot less space right. than a car does. Mm-hmm. And so, in effect, you know, adding this little bike lane on the side, if that pulls them out of the stream of traffic, then it's mm-hmm. benefiting everyone.
Right, right. I agree. In fact, the only thing that bothers me about bicyclists is when they're riding on the lane and there's no room for anyone to pass, right? So to have their own lane in this sort of thing, I think is the best way to go. And I do ride bicycles, and I am a pedestrian, and I do take public transit, so I understand that completely. So it's the big car folks that are kind of pushing back. This is what bothers me, right? So I've lived in places where there's a car culture, and I've lived in places where there is, you know, more of a public sharing culture, mm-hmm. right? In California and Seattle, California has sidewalks everywhere. Mm-hmm. There are no sidewalks in Roswell and Marietta, the suburbs of Atlanta where I live. Mm-hmm. And I'm a runner, so that bothers me as well. And I like to run on the road, but it's nice to have a sidewalk there when the car is coming and you got to get out of their way.
Right.
And I almost get run over on a regular basis. The same used to happen to me when I lived in Boston and rode a bicycle. So you mentioned something about the subsidies, right? That we subsidize public transportation in Atlanta. Is that subsidy less in other cities where they get greater ridership?
There are definitely cities out there where mm-hmm. It is less. But for the most part, MARTA actually does a pretty good job of okay. Running a very lean organization,
I think
believe
so,
it
yeah.
or not. And so the subsidies here are pretty comparable to what you see in okay. most similar sized cities, especially most car oriented cities.
Right.
New York City is a little yeah. bit of a different story,
right?
Right? You can't
right.
really compare that to most other places.
Right.
But if you're comparing us to Houston and places like that, yeah, right. we're definitely in line.
Yeah, and I've driven in Houston. Houston may actually be worse than us in terms of cars. That's a scary place. But, I mean, my view is that MARTA doesn't have to make money. I don't think it does, because MARTA improves our lives in so many ways.
Yeah.
And even though they've recently upped the fares on the MARTA trains to $2.50 per trip, mm-hmm. compared to parking and the gas and the trip, I literally never park at, you know, unless I'm late. If I'm late, I'm like, oh my gosh, I gotta get there. Mm-hmm. And you know, the other day I took a trip. I went up to Providence, Rhode Island, and I left, and I made it early for my flight because I got to the trolley stop, and I had 3 minutes for the trolley, and then I had 1 minute for the train, and it was all I knew I was going to be early because I accounted for the fact that sometimes that's 5 minutes or 10 minutes or seven mm-hmm. minutes and mm-hmm. things like that. So it works so beautifully.
Yeah.
All right, so let me make an attempt to summarize what we're talking about here. The first thing I learned is that things are very culture dependent and location dependent. I mean, how exactly you do this depends a lot. But it's even necessary in Zurich, Switzerland, where mm-hmm. things are synchronized to the atomic clock on the Zurichlinie coming around the corner, because every once in a while, you know, a car gets hit by one of these things, right? That's their biggest problem, because as you said, one of the cultural differences, they have the right of way.
Mm-hmm.
And the cars have to get out of the way. That is not true of buses. Mm-hmm. So no matter how good the system is, no matter how good the bus drivers are, we may never get to exactly on time for the schedule.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why this one bus away thing and letting you know what your wait time is so important. Mm-hmm. Then the original attempt of this to tell you what is one bus away, that's being picked up by Google and a lot of other apps that are on my phone. But the trick is, how long is it going to take me to wait for that? And that drives me nuts. Mm-hmm. Here's what I'm waiting for. I'm waiting for when it tells me the wait time in my doctor's office or my dentist office. That would be really, really good. And there are a lot of important things in here, the human-computer interaction, the nature of that interface. Most importantly is getting the data, sharing the data. Mm-hmm. And it seems as though, maybe, are you just nice when you ask them? Is that why you're able to get data from these?
I'm very nice when I ask them, but I think they believe in it. I've got a lot of good evidence that it's going to make a difference. So.
Right. And what you're saying is this is the wave of the future. This kind of app is going to be integrated eventually into our calendar and everything that's on our smartphone. So it's going to be like that orange juice commercial where mm-hmm. your tablet or your device wakes you up in the morning and tells you the weather, you know, whether the bus is running late, you know, all this sort of thing. Mm-hmm. I guess my final question to you is, your graduate students, are mm-hmm. they all civil engineering students or do you have CS folks and other folks?
Yeah, well, so I have some students that are co-advised you know, their advisor is in another department and I work with them in addition. Mm-hmm. So all of mine that I primarily advise are actually civil engineering students, but I do a lot of partnering to get the CS students involved. But part of my goals is actually to build that up better, though, that I would bring in students who are really interested in like a dual degree kind of program where they would be taking the CS oriented classes, but then also taking the transportation classes from us so that they understand how the system works.
Right. So, and the point I wanted to make was that nowadays things are so multidisciplinary that if you're a CS person, you might actually be concentrating in a domain, whether it's civil engineering or chemical mm-hmm. engineering or physics or whatever, to make the app work. Mm-hmm. And this is just sort of a note to folks thinking of going to graduate school. It's not always going to be just primarily in where you did your undergraduate degree. Mm-hmm. And I think what Carrie's talking about is possibly dual degrees mm-hmm. in graduate school.
Or even, you know, getting that CS undergrad and then coming to see me and saying, I really want to learn more about transportation and how we can make this work better. And I want to use those skills I have from my undergrad.
Yeah. And this is not unprecedented. Mm-hmm. Most of us will take a few students in an area that were not in our original area. They have to take some remedial coursework to learn about basic civil engineering and traffic, stuff like that. But what you're saying is this is only going to expand to create the app of the future that will make my life absolutely fabulous.
It'd be great.
All right.
Can I throw one plug in there?
You can throw more than one. Can you tell us where we can get these apps?
Yeah, exactly. Check out atlanta.onebusaway.org or just onebusaway.org, and there's a scroll menu that you can pick Atlanta from the other cities, mm-hmm. or if you happen to be in the other ones, you can check it out. That's the website. Or go onto the Google Play, the iPhone store, and download the apps. It's mm-hmm. just One Bus Away. And same with Cycle Atlanta, cycleatlanta.org, or download the Cycle Atlanta app from for either Android or iPhone.
Right. And if you go to insidetheblackbox.org, you can actually find a link on today's show to the feature on Georgia Tech's webpage, which has information about all this sort of all this stuff. So, Carrie, thank you so much for being on the program.
Thanks for having me.
And if you've got a question or comment about this show or a suggestion for a future program on Inside the Black Box, by all means, send us an email at comments@insidetheblackbox.org. Our chief engineer is Austin Redd. Our theme music is composed and performed by Bill and Mary Hunt from the Electrical and Computer Engineering Department. Bill's our former co-host. We got to try to get him back on here, man. I don't know why he shunned us. And again, a reminder that we are a production of the WREK Studios here on the campus of the Georgia Institute of Technology. Please join us next week for Inside the Black Box, science only funnier.